So our keynote session this morning is developing a comic vision. Everyone in this room can appreciate humor and the positive impact it can have on our lives. Our speaker will teach us how to be able to use humor as a business skill to overcome everyday adversity. Our speaker is a drop-dead funny laugh-out-loud humorist who teaches audience to look at life with humor and through the lens of what he calls a comic vision. A leading authority in stress reduction through humor, he is an accomplished author, a keynote speaker, a coach, and consultant. And during the last 15 years, he has delivered his entertaining, informative presentations nationally and internationally, speaking to government groups, professional associations, and corporations of every kind. He's a certified speaking professional. He's also a Hall of Fame member of the Council of Peers Award of Excellence. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Mr. Tim Gard.
I'm sexy and I know it.
Thank you very much. The Speaker Hall of Fame, there are 150 of us worldwide. Every time I find one of them, I kill them. There can be only one. So I'm going to be spending the next 90 minutes with you. I promise that I'm not going to be having you hug each other or sing kumbaya. I was just at a conference where they had everybody touch fingers with the person next to them and say something personal they always wanted to say but were afraid to say it. And about half the group got up and walked out. And the young man that did it was with me on the way to the airport. And he asked me, he said, "You know, Tim, you've been in the business a long time. What did I do wrong?" And I said, "Carl, these are truck drivers. They're more comfortable with pull my finger rather than touch my finger. So we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about how to use humor as a business skill, as a business owner. I use it all the time. I'm actually in competition with 2,000 to 3,000 speakers from all over the planet every single day. Just this last week, I got called, and there's a friend of ours that was up for the same job. His name is Mark Mayfield, and the client said, "It's between you and Mark Mayfield. He's a male model." And he says, "Now I get you two confused." And I said, "That'd be Mark. I'm not the male model." And she said, "Why should we hire you instead of Mark?" And I think she thought I'd talk him down. And I said, "I had my appendix taken out about 6 years ago." I said, "Mark still has his. And it's just one more thing that could potentially go wrong at your upcoming conference." And I ended up getting the job, and he called me back and he said, "I don't have an appendix either, you know." So we're gonna talk about this today. It's not, using humor isn't about telling jokes. It's about understanding that your days are a series of good and bad things. True or false? Now, these aren't the tough questions, people, all right? We'll get a little more complicated, but your days are a series of good and bad things. True or false? You have employees call in that call in sick so much that, you know, they might as well call in and never come in anymore. I mean, you have people that want you to come in, and it's like they'll have a rat or they'll have a bed bug problem for years, and they want you to come when? Yesterday. They want you to invent a flux capacitor or find Sherman and Peabody and go back in time. These are what I call bummers. When something bad happens that bothers me, I put my hand right here and I say, "Bummer." Try that. Bummer. You let it go. When something good happens, I do this. Woohoo! Try that. You get a big contract, you know, things are going real good. You have to celebrate that. And what I do is I go, "Woohoo!" Try it again. Woohoo! Sometimes you just do it in your mind. I mean, when a beautiful woman sits next to me on the airplane, I don't go, "Woohoo!" At least not anymore. But what I've discovered is that if you're going to do what I do, I know for a fact that the guy behind me is going to set his newspaper on the back of my head when I'm flying. I know some kid is going to kick my seat. I know some baby is going to scream at a decibel level that only dolphins should be able to hear. This is my life. And you can't get angry. I waited last night. There's a hotel shuttle that runs every 20 minutes. I was at the airport for almost an hour and a half. And the woman kept telling me, "It's there every 20 minutes." And I just said, "I believe I'm caught in a time warp, you know, because I'm just not seeing it." I mean, it doesn't do any good to get angry about it, right? Right? On the way here, this is a perfect example. I flew out of Denver International Airport. I've flown almost 2 million miles. I've been all over the world. Travel is not a surprise to me. I mean, I'm one of the few people that love to travel. Even though I do it all the time, I love to travel because I have to. If I don't get into this situational stress factor of my life, I'm going to burn out. And if you haven't seen them, then I'll tell you right now, there are burned out angry speakers all over the planet. You know, it's gotten so hard when you travel. It's unbelievable. And if you don't travel very much, take my word for it. On the way here, just a perfect example. Denver National Airport has been working on their parking garage for over 15 years. I just spoke to one of the parking authorities, and I read that the sun is due to burn out in 100 million years. And I told him, you're going to be finishing this project in the dark. That's how long it's gone on. And they'll mark out huge areas of parking for years. And they'll be like, well, we're planning on doing something. Now, I can't find a parking place. And that's a what? Keep up with me. That's a what? That's a bummer. And yet, when I pulled in, when I pulled in the spot, there's a guy coming the other way, and he's hitting his hands on the dash, yelling at me because I took his parking spot. You know, I mean, here's a guy that hasn't even started his journey, and his head is almost ready to blow up. That is not the way to do it. I got up to the counter, and I told him I'm flying to Toronto. It's a direct flight. And the guy that was ahead of me in line that's next to me is yelling and screaming at the gate agent because the flight has been delayed due to fog in Toronto. And he says, I don't care if there's fog in Toronto. I've got to go to Toronto. You'll go to Toronto. And he walks off. And I said, I have a different opinion. If you can't land the plane, I'm not getting on, you know. And quite frankly, you can't make me. And the person was helping me laughed and said, Tim, you made me laugh. I'm going to upgrade you to first class for free. Woohoo! You know? So I go through security. And again, you can't make this stuff up. When I go through security, there are 10 lanes on both sides of Denver International Airport. I know that only two of them are ever going to be open at any given time. I have a 50-50 chance of getting in the wrong lane. And I will always get in the wrong lane. Right? I mean, it's exactly right. It's a bummer. I'm going to get behind somebody that has, they've got petrol in their backpack. Or there was a guy last week that had a brick. He had a brick. And when they said, what is it? And he took it out. He said, I've been looking for that. And it was like, how long have you been walking around going, I've lost my brick? You know, I mean, it boggles my mind. Anyway, I go through security. And I get down to the little shuttle. And if you've been in Denver, you can't go from A to B concourse without being on a shuttle. And I go to get on the shuttle, and it doesn't come. And it doesn't come. You can't walk there. And you hear this. This is what you hear pretty soon. You're, wah, 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 wah. And everybody just stands there. You know, we just. Pretty soon you're, wah, 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 wah. And this guy next to me goes, what'd they say? Wah, 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 wah. I don't speak wah, you know. And the thing is, people are starting to get angry. So, I mean, again, we have this very angry feeling over the fact the shuttle isn't coming. I go to get in line. I go to get on the plane, and I told the gate agent, they actually boarded us twice. So we got to board, and then we went to board again, and they stopped because was it that bad of fog? Well, they didn't actually board us twice. They boarded us once, and then they came back and told us we were going to board, and we went and stayed in line forever. But was the fog really bad here? Okay. I trust them. I mean, I don't think they're going to make that up. I think they want to go here. But we go to get on the plane, and I sat down, and this guy that was sitting across from me ordered a margarita. He wanted a margarita. And this is morning, you know, this is Denver in the morning. If you're jonesing for a margarita, I understand it. But he wanted one right now. And I've been on planes all over the world. I've never seen one with a blender. Ever. And finally, she gave him a beer, which settled him down. She looked at me and she goes, what would you like? And I said, do you have Tang? Do you have like Bosco or Ovaltine, Nestle's? I said, I'd like a milkshake. And she just looks at me and she goes, what would be your second choice? And I said, I'd like a margarita, like that guy, you know. I have to travel. I'm going to have fun, and quite frankly, nobody's going to stop me. And it's the same thing in your business, is that a lot of times when people ask you what you do, you have to have a pride in what you do, and you have to be able to explain it to them. I used to be a welfare fraud investigator in the U.S., you know, and I went through this thing where somebody'd say, what do you do? Well, I I investigate fraud. Is there a lot of it? Oh, you know, the thing is, if we don't have pride in what we do, as a CSP, Certified Speaking Professional, they're less than 8% of them on the planet. There are only 150 of the Council on Peers Award of Excellence in the world. Being the best you can be, in my opinion, and tell this to the folks that work for you, being the best you can be is the best insulation from stress that there is. When you know how to do that voodoo that you do so well, that isn't, to me, the number one stress reliever. I have a black belt in airline travel. I travel, if I can't get from point A to point B, it is not physically possible to get there. By the way, rule number one, don't have to touch anybody. I thought if I put it in writing, you'd believe me, because you don't, all right? To some of you, that's a what? To others, that's a what? Some of you located yourself next to prime hugging candidates. But rule number one is have fun. Say it. Have fun. If you don't enjoy doing what you're doing, you better stop it right now. True or false? I mean, if you don't really, to me, when I talk to people about having fun, I'm not telling them about telling jokes. I'm telling them that I am always working on my craft. I'm always trying to be better at what I do. It's why you're here. And if I don't do that, I'm going to burn out. I'm going to become one of those angry travelers at the airport you see that you walk past that are doing this. Talk to me like that, I'll talk to you like that. Those people have had one too many what? Bummers. Having fun. I was in Australia recently, and when I travel, this is actually one of my bags. When I travel with two of these. One of them usually has my books and videos and stuff in it. The other one has my clothes. When I landed in Sydney, the guy told me that this first bag flies free. On this Blue Star Airlines, first bag flies free. Second bag is going to cost me $400. And I said, that's not good for me. That's not good. And he said, here's the deal. He said, first bag on Jetstar flies free. Second bag is by weight. It's $400. And I said, we got to work something out. And he said, here's what we do. You give me $400 or I'm going to keep the bag and we'll destroy it. And I said, got to be another solution. Humor is the combining of ideas that aren't normally associated with one another. That's all it is. And I said to him, what's a one-way ticket cost to the Gold Coast from Sydney? And he says, they're on special for $98. I said, sell me another one of those. And he says, you already have a ticket. I said, I know, but first bag flies free. This ticket, that bag flies free. This ticket, that bag flies free. I just saved $302. And it made him mad. And he hands me the tickets, and I go to walk off, and I looked at him, and I'm in 16A and 23D. And I went back to him, and I said, can't I sit with myself? And this is no kidding. He goes, maybe somebody will move. And I said, do you want me to ask somebody to move so I can be together? And he looks at me and he goes, you win. And I said, I don't want to win. I just want to have fun. And I think $400 is too much for a bag. You with me on this? You start learning how to see the creative things that can happen around you. You know, one of the sayings, and I hope I don't step on another speaker's toes today, I think outside the box is an incredibly stupid saying. Because I don't know where the box is. I don't know who else is in the box with me. I don't know what the rules are in the box. I don't know, I mean, is it a big box, a little box? I don't know. But I can tell you that if you use humor to combine ideas that aren't normally associated with one another, that is at the heart of creativity. And that is, in fact, where we come up with the really not just funny stuff, but the great ideas. You know, to come here and speak with you folks, I knew nothing about your business. I've discovered about a lot of things that I wish I'd never known before. I actually walk into every hotel room, and the first thing I do is pull the sheets back and look for bed bugs at the top. And believe me, I've changed rooms more than once. You know, we were talking last night. I was in New Mexico, and there was a lady with a black light walking around, and I asked her what she was doing, and they'd had a scorpion hatch. And she just said, make sure you knock your shoes out in the morning. And it's like, you bet, you know. There are a lot of things that I think that what happens is that we don't realize if you want to really be creative and look at things differently, humor is really the way to do it. I actually invented, you know, I give away a lot of props here. I invented this for you. I have a couple of them with me. These are Don't Bug Me glasses. If you're in your office and you want to be left alone, this will work. These are for your president here. Those are yours. I'll give those to you. And I have a pair for you, too. But what I've realized is if I'm not having fun, I'm going to burn out. And I think that when you look at the same, let's see how they look. Put them on. Let's see how they're good. They're pretty good. You should have seen me going through customs with those in the U.S., going through security, and it's metal in my bag, and I take them out, and I have them on, and the guy goes, and the purpose of this is, Mr. Guard, and I said, normal people laugh, you know, and then and you just kind of go like this. Right? I think that when you stop having fun is when you start having employee problems, and I think that your attitude with your business goes out like a ripple effect. When you're angry and upset, your employees know this. When there are problems that are going on, it's like you're on stage from the minute you show up to the minute you go home. And the tone of voice that you have on the radio, on the phone, all of those things matter. Humor helps us refresh and renew in between negative encounters. And I know this in my own office, is that if I'm not realizing, if I'm not what we call in our speaker business, present, in the now, right here, right now, then I can have, my employees have misinterpreted things all the time. I sent a message to one of my assistants, and the cap key stuck on the computer. So I just typed, need to talk to you when you get a second, give me a call. Well, it was all in caps, and Anna thought I was yelling at her. She goes up, is there an emergency? No. Well, your message was all capped, you know. She read it like, call me right now. There's a big, you know. It happens all the time. Having fun is the way around it. I do your dismount. That's all right. Yeah, the glasses, you couldn't see. Bummer, exactly. See how simple it is? I was in Chicago a couple months ago and went to go to Dallas, and the flight was delayed due to a mechanical problem, and I was on American Airlines, and I have no status on the airline. And I walk up the counter, and the guy goes, well, our flight's delayed due to mechanical. Our next flight leaves at midnight. And it's like noon. And I said, I'm not waiting here for 12 hours. I'm not doing it. And he goes, well, that's our next flight. That's when we'd like you to wait. And I said, there's an alternative. And he goes, no, there isn't. I said, well, yeah. Under rule 120.20 of the FAA code, if a passenger is delayed due to mechanical or crew problem, you're required to put them on the next carrier regardless of the fare basis code. Isn't that correct? And he goes, yeah. And I said, so 120.20 me over to that Delta flight that leaves in about an hour. And he said, well, we'd rather not do that. Well, I'd rather your plane ran on time. You know, so he endorses my ticket. I walk off, and I hear this guy behind me go, I want that 2020 thing like that guy. And I don't think he got it. You have to know the rules. The better you are, the more fun it is. I know when to put my, I know when to dig my heels in, and I know when you ask for help. And I found that if we learn to talk at people, I mean, if we learn to talk with people and not at them, pay attention now, you're going to have trouble. Use humor first for yourself. Say for myself. For myself. Say it again. For myself. If you get angry, you lose the battle. When I walk up to the counter, I am not going to get angry with those people behind the counter, at the hotels, any of those things. And prime example of it are these things right here. These hotel room keys have changed our lives. These are incredible, and yet these are one of the most frustrating things that you can ever encounter the minute they go wrong. I was in Las Vegas. How many of you have been to Las Vegas? I'm always curious. I love Las Vegas. I'm at the MGM Grand Hotel. The rooms are over a mile from the place you check in. You have to walk past every gaming machine on the planet to get to your room. And I walked to my room. I mean, I'd almost forgotten why I was there. I'd been walking so long. And I get to my room, and I have my door key, and I put the door key in, and it doesn't work. So what do you do? What do you do? You curse and swear, and you're, you know, and so you put it in slower, then you put it in faster, you know, and you're trying all these, and then you think maybe it's installed backwards, and then I'll go upside down. Maybe, I mean, it could happen. I don't want to walk all the way back to the front desk. I do not want to do this, you know. And that's really it. That's all you can do. And then for some reason we do this. I don't know what this does. And then I go through the whole thing again. And I thought, so I walk all the way back to front desk. And I walk up, and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and there's 6 people standing there. And this lady goes, oh, Mr. Gard, is there a problem? And I said, my card key doesn't work. And the lady looks at me, and she goes, did you put it next to an eel skin wallet? And I said, you know, I've been gone a long time, but I don't think I did that. And she said, did you put it next to your cell phone? Now, here I am explaining. It's like, no, I did not put it next to. I mean, I have all these things. It's my fault, obviously. And I said, it just won't work. And she said, let me show you how to operate it. She reaches under the counter, pulls out a full-size replica of the door and the little assembly. And she said, can I have your key? Sure. And I hand it to her. And she says, now watch what I do. She puts it in and takes it out. And she said, do you understand? I said, no, do it again. I mean, that's. And she goes, you got it? And she goes, how are you doing it? Maybe that'll help. And I took the card from her and I said, I was just hitting the door with it like this, you know. And she takes it back away and she goes, no, it's just like this. You just put it in like this, you take it out. And this guy walks up and he goes, hey, my key won't work. And I said, come over here, she'll show you how to do it. And, but this is what I'm saying with this. This either becomes a funny story or it makes you angry. And if you spend a little bit of time with it, you start learning that in your business, if you don't learn to act and not react to the situational stressors, you're going to burn out. Again, my life is hotels and airplanes. I'm at the Embassy Suites in Miami Beach, and I'll never forget the date, July 17th. And I go to check in, and it's hot in the hotel, which is not unusual. It's 100 degrees outside. It's midnight, 100 degrees outside. I walk in, and hot in the lobby, go up in my room and open the door, and it's like a sauna. You know, and I called to the front desk, and I said, I got right about here. I said, hey, there's a, and this kid goes real excited. He goes, sir, I can't talk to you right now. We had a transformer blow up outside the hotel. And I said, is it the Decepticons? Are the Decepticons attacking? And he goes, oh, it's not Transformers, like the movie. He said, it's just one Transformer. And I said, one Transformer would kill us all. I mean, didn't you see that movie? And he said, what would you like to do? And I said, you need to call Optimus Prime. We're in a lot of trouble here. And I walked downstairs in the morning, and there was a bottle of wine and a note from the manager that said that his employees had laughed about this all night long. Rather than being angry about it, one of the employees said, I had a hard time not saying that to almost everybody that called afterwards. This is not an abstract concept. This using humor first for yourself is literally a survival mechanism to realize, you know, people will do the most. You have employees that will do incredibly bizarre things. True or false? You know, I mean, I just did some work with a safety group, and they were telling me that one of the first questions they ask when somebody has a safety violation is they say to them, what were you thinking? And what's the answer? I wasn't. I mean, I think that goes without saying some of the things. The one that they had just investigated was the Navy in Key West, Florida. I don't know why I'm pointing that way. In Key West, Florida, one of the guys had looked at they have a dirigible, those big air balloons, and the guy that was supposed to be watching it was told that they're not to release it until he gets a call on the radio. And this radio call comes in and says, is the dirigible still secured? And he goes, yeah, and hits the button and releases it. And then it was like, oh, yeah, wait, because they said wait for the call. Good stuff. But see, there's so many things that you can do to insulate yourself from this. My boss, I used to be with USDA. My boss used to walk around every morning, and he did this before we really started work. He'd walk around and he'd do this every morning. He'd go, he called it greeting the troops. And he'd walk out and he'd go, morning, head screwed on tight today? Good to see you. He'd ask everybody if their head was screwed on tight. Morning, head screwed on tight today? Good to see you. Now, the first time I got asked if my head was screwed on tight, I thought that was mildly amusing. Okay? After about 6 months of it, I'd see him coming. It's like, he's going to say it, head screwed on tight. So I got one of these, and he gets right about here, and he goes, morning, guard. And I did this. And the funny thing is with this is that I sat there and messed with it, and I said, thank, good thing you were here, you know. It was like, that was a close one. But some of the people I worked with never figured out how to use this. You know, they'd see him coming. His name was Bob, and it's like they go, Bob! You know, it was almost as good. You know, so this humor that we use the humor first for ourselves, and the last thing is share it. Say it. Share it. We want to share this humor. Have I made mistakes? Yeah. I was in Singapore, and I just come out with these stress cows. I don't know why, it's just kind of funny that you can put these on your desk and they make you smile. And so I'm talking as I'm, and if we were in Singapore right now, in this room, you'd probably have 30 or 40 different countries and maybe 30 different religions going on in the same room. Lady answered a question and I tossed her a stress cow. You can have this one. She catches it and the room went crazy laughing. And I said, it was like, what did I do wrong? And the lady goes, oh, I'm sure you didn't know I'm Hindu. She said, to us, cows are sacred. She said, this would be like me throwing you a Jesus action figure. And then she sent me one in the mail. But we make mistakes. I was in Rome, and I've always wanted to speak in Rome. I have these little one lines that I have to do before I die. I've had one of this for a long, long time. And I got done with my program, and the lady that hired me said, Mr. Gard, we'd like to take you out to dinner. Where would you like to go? And I've been waiting my whole life for this. And I said, when in Rome. She looked at me, and she goes, yeah. And I realized they don't say that there. That's the one place. They don't say that, you know. And she said, how was your ride in? All roads lead to Rome. Yeah. But when you start learning to share this, realize everybody communicates a little bit differently. That's how a lot of you smell humor. It's understanding the differences in communication that brings us together and helps us have more fun at work. It's understanding that kind of stuff. And you don't have to tell jokes to do it. It's all about learning to look at things a little bit differently. All right, so let me run through here. Here's what we're going to talk about today. We already talked about that. There's no perfect job. Is there a perfect job? There's no perfect job. You know, if somebody's looking for a perfect job, they're not going to find it. They're always looking for somewhere else. Deal breakers. This last summer, one of my friends' son mowed lawns for a friend of mine. That's his business, and he's allergic to grass clippings, and every day he came home with hives. Probably shouldn't be cutting lawns. Yeah. Leadership and humor. Here's the science of humor. Let me show you how the science works. What color is this tablecloth? What color? Say it again. Louder. One more time. One more time. What do cows drink? What do cows drink? Water. Now you're afraid of me. Here's the thing. This is how humor works. There's a science to it it's a misdirection that surprises you. And actually, it's a celebration of a miscommunication. There's a science to it. We'll talk about that. I'm not a comedian. I've never done stand-up comedy. But I can tell you that if you want to communicate with somebody, if you want to increase what's known as your likability factor, you have to be able to use humor. If it's a choice between you and one of your competitors, and you both have about the same rates, they're going to select the person that has a higher factor of likability. True or false? That's what it boils down to. Humor helps us do that. And I'll give you some ideas with that. Good, bad humor, we'll talk about that. You can get sued. You know, you have to be aware of the fact that we can't say or do anything we want and then say, just kidding. Humor and listening, I'll go through these with you. Visual, auditory, everybody do this. Make a circle with your thumb and finger, just like this. You don't have to touch anybody. Remember what I said? Now do what I tell you to do. Put it on your chin. 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 Some of you out there, it's on my chin. What's so funny? Now there's no, I'm not tricking you. Some of you are still going, I'm not getting this. What happened was when I told, take your hands down. When I told you to put it on your chin, a lot of you that are visual people did this, right? You did what you saw. Those of you that are more auditory did what you what? Heard. The visual people, the bug glasses will work better with them. There are so many things that visual people can do. These are cube crabs. This is, if you have crabby people in the office, you know, you can. Are we being a little crabby today? And I know some of you are saying, Tim, did you bring any more of those? Got to raise your hand to get the free stuff. I've got free stuff here all the way in the back. And I actually have, I'll have to show you up there, I've got some of the foam bed bugs from next door. I never thought you could make a bed bug look pretty cute, but that's amazing. Those are really pretty great. I'll show you. Yeah, but the thing is with these is that visual humor, if you can't tell jokes, don't. Find another way to use humor. And again, there are so many things that you can do up here. But these, like I say, if you haven't been over to the exhibit hall, I never thought anybody could make bed bugs look cute. I think those are so funny. Can you imagine? You bring these home, you know, and it's like your daughter's telling your wife, I got bed bugs. You know, I love that stuff. So what happens here is the more you use it, the easier it becomes. And the more you understand that if you can't tell jokes, you need to stop right now and do something else. We'll talk about that. Okay, so I have freebies. In your business, everybody wants what? They want free stuff. I have for you freebies. I carry these with me wherever I go. I love finding out if somebody has freebies. And I'll walk up the counter here. When I check in a hotel, I want an upgrade to a suite for free. Why? Why not? Exactly. I mean, if they have suites, why not put me in one? And if you, it's like we were saying, if you don't ask, you're not going to get. And I'll walk up to somebody and I'll say, do you have any freebies today? And they'll go, no. And I'll go, then these are for you. Next thing you know, I'm in a suite. Woohoo! You know. I just asked, I was on Delta and I have no status on them, and was coming out of Detroit, and this young lady at the counter, I walked up and I said, can you upgrade me for free? Can you upgrade me to first class? And she goes, why would I do that? And I said, I like first class. I like it a lot. And she looks at my status and sees I don't fly very much, and she said, I'll have to check. And I said, I'll hold my breath. And I'm standing there holding my breath, and she's typing. This other woman goes, what's she doing? She goes, I'm typing as fast as I can. I got upgraded to first class. So this is my official policy manual. In your businesses today, if you get nothing out of what I tell you, I want you to get this. Don't tell people what your policy is. Tell them what you can do. Tell them what you can't do. But when you start telling people it's our what? Policy is when you run into trouble. So I had these policy manuals made up, and it's my official policy manual. And ladies, you'll be happy to know I have a little sticker that goes over the front that says it's good to be queen. I'm funny, not stupid. And when somebody quotes me their policy, I can show them this, and I can even write my own policies in here with them. I mean, people will quote policy right and left. I've got my own manual. And then on the back, you put your own picture back here. I just came back from Australia, and I like to use his picture when I'm traveling. Just seems to help. This is my Comic Visions coloring book. I've discovered during boarding of the aircraft, if I want to be left alone, if I'm coloring, people will leave me alone. And if I'm coloring pictures of myself, it even works better. I was coming out of Ontario, California, and it was like a midnight flight. And these people came on board, and it was a husband, wife, and they're like three little kids. And I got bumped up to first class, and this little girl is sitting next to me who's about 5 to 6 years old. Nothing to do. And the TVs didn't work, and she's just, her mouth is going a mile a minute. Finally, I said, do you like the color? Yeah. So I get the coloring books out. She and I are coloring, and her mom wakes up and looks over and says, what are you doing? Did she make you color? I said, no, they're my coloring books. And she goes, what are they pictures of? It's just me. You know, it's just a, you know, that was the end of that. I guess it did sound bad, all right? So here's the thing. The Tao, or the way of humor, is a Chinese word that comes, it means the road, the way of the universe, the way of life, and it's made up of two parts, head and actions at a crossroads. When you leave here after this conference, if you don't take the things you learn and reapply them into your businesses, then this is a waste of time. You know, if you don't go back and take one or two things that can help you grow your business, then this is not the best investment of your time. And I think this is what we need to do, is that you need to identify, even if it's just one or two things. And you look at this science of it and realize that humor relates to a common understanding. There are jokes that you're going to have in your business that other humans are not going to get, and that's okay. Jokes don't translate. You know, when I come to Toronto, a lot of times they'll have split screens and we'll explain that, you know, they have things in different languages. Some jokes don't translate. Do you know why that is? It's that the syntax changes. The last word in the sentence is a punch word. And when you change the arrangement of the sentence, it changes the meaning of a joke. And so a play on words do not work very well in other countries or where people speak different languages, and so they don't translate as well. The Tang joke that I told you earlier, we were talking, I was in London and told that joke and nobody laughed. Why? Not a lot of astronauts in London. Tang is not, and that's why I use the milkshake line now, is that some things just don't translate very well. All right, leadership is the ability to effectively use all the tools available to bring out the best in people. To me, what I want you to do with your business is understand that leadership isn't about getting people to do their job, it's about getting people to do their best. And that there are employee tourists and that there are employee entrepreneurs. And that's what I'm looking for. It's somebody who look at my business the way, or that will look at working for me the way they would if that was their own business. That this is where so many of the bizarre things happen that we don't realize that this employee tourism is rampant. You know, people, U.S. has not been changed for quite some time. One phone call saved me $400 a month. That's not right. See what I mean? I shouldn't have been the one that had to do that. All right, read that out loud. The longer you read this, the more your brain is programmed to understand it. We tell ourselves, I'm tired, I'm angry, I'm upset, I can't deal with this, and your brain believes it up to a point. I mean, if you're doing this, I'm tired. No, you're not. Yes, you are. Then seek professional care. But when I go on a trip, I don't tell myself, this is going to be the worst trip ever. I don't say I'm going to have problems. I think it's magic that I can have breakfast in Denver and dinner in Toronto. I think that's amazing. And I look at it the same way. And every time I arrive, I'm pleasantly surprised. All right, we already talked about this. I check in hotels occasionally. I can't wait to check in. I'm going to give you some ideas about that for me. And we already talked about these things, about the humor and likability. But here's some of the things I want you to think about when you leave here. You have to learn to assume the best about your employees if they're going to use humor. That woman that I threw that cow to could have gotten extremely upset and probably filed a complaint against me. She assumed the best. She knew that I didn't know she was Hindu. You know, I have these glasses, a little bit out of order, but I have these glasses that you can wear when you have... How many of you have ever been in a boring meeting? How many have been in a meeting that was so boring you wanted to fake a heart attack to get out of it? I got these glasses. You can put these on. You could be out like a light and nobody knows. These work out really well. Do you want a pair? And here's the thing with these. Having them in your purse or pocket, it's just nothing but makes me laugh. Last month, I handed them to a guy in the audience that had narcolepsy. It's that disease where you suddenly faint. What are the odds that someone would have narcolepsy in that audience? And what are the odds in the room that I'd select the one person just randomly? We have to learn to assume the best and not assume the worst, because if you don't do that, humor just won't work. And this absence of malice is the same thing, is that in newspapers, in journalism, they're going to misprint things. And when they do, absence of malice means they can correct it, that they're not intentionally doing it to cause stress. And then you have to ask yourself, if your employees think this is a life sentence instead of potentially being somewhat fun, they're going to have problems. They're going to dread what they do. When I go on a trip, I can't wait to start. And believe me, this is my second million miles. I just flew into Anchorage, Alaska, and had my face pressed up against the glass as we flew over Portage Glacier. And this woman next to me said, "Is this your first flight?" And I didn't even tell her that this was my second million miles. I think that stuff's amazing. I did a program in London, and every person that checks in by themselves gets a goldfish in a bowl. Every one of them. You want a surrealistic picture? Here are all these businessmen walking down the hallway with the goldfish bowl, trying to figure out how to get their door key to work. But I got down, the next day I went down and they had all these goldfish sitting on the counter, and this woman asked me, she said, I wonder how they stay sane. You know, here's what happens. They swim around here all day long. How does the goldfish stay sane? And I looked it up. Goldfish have a memory of about 5 seconds. So as they're going around the bowl, it's like they're going, hey, that's new. Oh, I've never seen that before. Hey, I got a castle. You know, and by the time they come back, it started new. This is like some of your employees. Right? So here's what I do, is that you have to realize that this is going to happen and that sometimes you feel as if you've lost your marbles. These are my marble bags. Each of these have 5 marbles in them. All you do is, you can have one of those. What you do is when somebody says, have you lost your marbles? It's like you go, oh no, I have them right here. Here, I'll get you one. But these little things, the goldfish, the one that's in there, if you open them up, is the shooter. And it's the big goldfish ball. And when you think that you're going to be cracking up or it's going to drive you nuts, I think these are the things that we have to hold on to in order to get past all the situational stress factors every day. And I actually carry this with me when I'm traveling simply because I don't want to get upset about people that do incredibly bizarre things. And I put it in my pocket and it makes me remember. This is mental floss. You know, when you've told an employee the same thing over and over and over, this is mental floss. You just get them to floss. You know, it's like they almost said, don't get angry. Who wants mental floss? Don't get angry. It's these little things. And if you had this sitting in your desk or when you're on the phone to somebody and you're starting to get upset about it, come up, I'll give you one, okay? The bottom line with it is, I'm going to have fun, and quite frankly, nobody's going to stop me. All right, so here's what we want to do. I want you to start by seeing things differently. About 2 years ago, I fell off a stage in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I want to show you how it happened. I'd gotten up on the stage, and on the left-hand side over here was 4 steps, and on the, I'm sorry, which would be your stage left. Over here, there was 3 steps. And I couldn't figure out why there was a difference. And what I found out was, over here, the first step came down just like this one. Over here, the first step was broken, and they'd taken it off. So the first step started down where that second step is right there. Nobody warned me about it. All they had to do is point and go. So they didn't do that. So over here, I'm talking to somebody, I'm giving free stuff away, and somebody over here goes, we're not getting enough free stuff over here. And I go running across the stage, and my foot comes down to where my brain has been programmed to believe that a step exists. And gravity isn't just a good idea, it's the law. And I begin to hurl at this woman that hired me at about Mach 6. I'm going to kill her. I'm going to crush her like a bug. She's dead. This is what she does to save her life. I mean, she might as well have the coyote umbrella or a straw. And my foot hit the first step. I went straight down, and adrenaline kicked in. I sprang up. I went over her chair, landed on the floor, skipped twice, and the audience was doing what? Laughing. Biggest laugh of my career. And in all honesty, I mean, it looked funny. I'm running. Foot comes down, hit spring, catch good air, and I'm laying on the side. I'm almost unconscious. It actually cracked a rib and broke my little toe. I'm laying unconscious on the side of the floor, and I have a little knee trouble. I'll be careful. This is what the audience sees and hears. Tim doesn't get up. And they stop laughing as if on cue. It's dead air. And I said, and now I'll take questions from the floor. And they lost it again. To this day, there are people there that think I did that on purpose. I couldn't replicate that again and live in a million years. But luck is preparation meeting opportunity. You have to know that when you're prepared for things like this to happen, then it's going to work to your favor. I had just watched Lou Heckler, who's a famous speaker in the U.S., talking on stage, and he was talking about dealing with change, and he fell through a hole in the stage, literally dropped from sight. And he came out and just kept right on talking. And I thought to myself, that's good. And so I was sitting there with Scott Friedman, and I said, Scott, what would you say if that happened to you? And we both wrote our best line down. His was, it's just a stage I'm going through. And mine was, and now I'll take questions from the floor. And so what happened was, luck is preparation meeting opportunity. I was ready at that point to be able to respond to that and realize that when you stay once, you either in your business, you either stay one step ahead or you're two steps behind. If you're not looking at all the things that are out there to help you do what you do, then you're not exploring all your options. I mean, do I tweet? Yes. Do I have on my Facebook? Yes. It just increased my bandwidth. I just got hired for a job by a gold mine company. They called me up. They said, we want to know if we can get an adjustment on your fee. And I said, don't call me and tell me you're a gold mine and you need my fee lowered. You know, tell me you mine salt or something. But I had just tweeted when they saved the Chilean miners. I tweeted, the good news is they saved them. The bad news is they have to go back to work on Monday. And it got me hired. It's just a broader band that's out there as business owners. And when you shift your perception, you create your own experience. You want to do things with your employees that are easy to remember and hard to forget. If you know Enron in the United States, that company had the best mission statement money could buy. But it did them no good when they failed because nobody knew what it was. You know, when you start telling people things like do the right thing, make the customer happy, begins to change on your bottom line. And you start by observing this humor, and I know you can tell that's in the U.S. I love this stuff. You know, this is everywhere. You can't make this stuff up. My parents were in the hospital. Oh, here, this is a new one. The little print at the bottom says, boy went to war in 1914, left his bike chained to a tree. I love that picture because it depicts a lot of you. You have to realize nature is going to prevail. You know, all the business that you have right now, we're the invasive species that's going on. All the things that are happening is the reaction of bed bugs and all these others to us, right? It's the only way, but I have this picture on my screensaver at home. This reminds me of how I'm about time. Is laughter the best medicine? No. My appendix burst about 5 years ago, and I was on an airplane at the time, and I about died. And they're rushing me to the hospital, and I get to the hospital, I'm laying there screaming in the emergency room, and the doctor looked at me and he said, oh, you're a comedian. You know, and I didn't argue with him, you know, and he's trying to talk to me, and all I can do is scream. Ah! I mean, the pain was just unbelievable. And finally, he looks at me, and he says, I don't know what to do. He said, we can't give you drugs because it will mask your symptoms. And I thought, why have them? Why taunt me with them? You know, if you can't give them to me, why am I at the hospital? Find me a place where I can mask my symptoms. And he finally gives me a shot of morphine. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember laying there doing this. Better, exactly. Woo-hoo. Symptoms are masked. So if you ask me if laughter is the best medicine, I got to go with morphine. Morphine, laughter is fifth or even ninth. Is that laughter is not always appropriate. If you have a customer who's upset with the bill that you deliver them, that's not the time necessarily to use laughter. Do you agree? You don't go, I know you're upset, but watch this. That's harder than it looks. Put your hands up. You don't have to touch anybody. Ready? Put your hands up. Ready? Ready? And that's harder than it looks. But you might do that where? In your mind to let it go. If you don't, you'll start hauling this stuff around with you. This is a hospital in Helena, Montana. I grew up in Montana. Does anybody have a problem with the name of this hospital other than me? Who names a hospital after the saint that guards the pearly gates? What message are you sending to your patients? I'm standing here looking at this hospital. My dad was in emergency. My mom was sick. And I'm just about, and I mean, I reached a point, I was actually pretty afraid, and I saw this sign, I just burst out laughing. And as I'm standing there, they bring a guy on a gurney that's been in a car accident, and he's going, "Where am I?" And I'm going, "Don't tell him." And I walk past him as I go in, and I go, "Hey, buddy, stay out of the light." You know, it's... I called the hospital and asked them if they'd give me a publicity shot. And when I told him I was going to make fun of the name, she goes, "No, you can't have it." So I just took a picture with my phone. I'm out front. I said, "I'll just take a picture with my phone." She goes, "You can't do that." So I just snapped this picture and then ran away. All right. So some stress is good. You know, I've been divorced. I'm divorced. I know there's two sides to every story, and I'm over it. But I've been dating this lady from Dallas, and she likes to go on roller coaster rides, and I don't like roller coasters, so we go whenever we can. I don't know what they're, I don't like to do it. She likes to do it. So we got off this roller coaster at Six Flags, and it was 3 minutes of terror. My eyeballs were going in different directions, and she goes, "Do you want to go again?" "Oh, yeah." And so, yeah, I'm funny, not stupid, you know. So I came off there. Now I've been there for 6 minutes. And all I could think of was, what if it lasted 10 minutes? What if it lasted a day or a week or a year? And yet this is what you tell yourself. We'll get through this busy time. We'll get through this. Humans can adapt to almost anything. But if you don't stop and learn to laugh at some of the things, if you don't celebrate your successes and stop and break this up, then anything you can get used to, but eventually it's going to cause you long-term damage. I did a flowchart for you here. This is, I know that, and I thought I'd keep it relatively short. So here's what your flowchart is every single day with what you do. So you can write this down if you want. Here's what happens every day. Wake up, which is what? Or not. If you don't wake up, you're dead. You're taking a dirt nap. Stress doesn't matter anymore. Your flowchart ends, all right? Then you, that's it. Then you have go to work or what? Not. This is a choice every day. I own my own business. I have for almost 17 years now. You know, I am not under a court order to do this. And when I go to work, I look forward to it, and I don't leave things to chance. We were here last night at 9 o'clock making sure that everything was perfect. And I realized that what you do is it's not an accident being successful. Go to work or not. The next one is big. This is for some of your employee tourists. Actually work or not. There are people that look busy that aren't doing nothing. I call them employee tourists. Be the best I can be or not. You know, when your folks ask you what you're looking for, I don't think this is that abstract of a term. I want you to be the best you can be at what you do. And I want you to have pride in what you do. Do you remember your first job? Think about this. Your first job? I mowed lawns. I dug ditches and I took care of people's summer homes. And I had business cards printed up that said, "Chlorophyll growth control, domicile maintenance, subterranean excavation engineering." Was I destined for federal service or what? And I had business cards printed up, and I'd hand them to a potential customer, and they'd see chlorophyll growth control, domicile maintenance, subterranean excavation engineering. I didn't get to explain to them that I mow lawns, dig ditches, and take care of people's summer homes. You know, some of them didn't get it, and I don't care. Is that I'm going to have pride in what I do, and I want them and you to do the same thing. Avoid or diffuse the stress or not. When I was in Anchorage here, I was driving out to the Captain Cook Hotel with some folks that were in the shuttle, and one of the guides was angry. He also lives in Denver. He commutes every day 90 minutes going into downtown Denver. There's almost, there's 750,000 people in Denver. If you commute and go to work at 9 o'clock, are you going to run into traffic every day? Yes! And I said, "You know, why are you surprised?" And he goes, "What should I do, Mr. Funny Man?" I do get that a lot. And I said, "Here's what you do. Quit your job, change your hours, do something else. But if you hate this that much, by the time you get to work, within an hour and a half, you're going to be angry." Isn't that right? You're going to be angry, and you don't want that to translate on. I said, or you can move to Anchorage. And about this time, almost on cue, you hear the radio go, and now the Alcan Highway traffic report. There's a car. There's another, yeah, and it moves. Is that if you can't deal with it, don't subject yourself to it. There was, the stories I tell you were true. Yesterday when I flew in here, there was, well, you know, those of you who live here, there's fog. That's going to happen. I had four backup flights. Is that I'm not going to put myself on the last flight and fly clear across the continent and put myself at risk or my clients at risk. I don't do it. Be a good humor leader or not. I don't tell gross jokes. I don't tell ethnic jokes. I don't do anything that diminishes anybody. That's my rule. Have fun. Woo-hoo! Or not. All right, so have fun. This, I want you to understand this. Let me show you this real quick here. Every day, I don't want to gloss through this. This is what happens every day with your businesses. Whether you're in the office or out in the field, every day you take all the problems that bothered you, and a lot of you take them home like a little wagon, and you go, see you tomorrow. And you come home, and your husband and wife says, how was your day? And you do this. There's my day. Deal with that day. And they'll say, what happened? Oh, I can't really talk about it, you know. So you drag it back to work. If you don't do anything else, do this. Find a chair, sit down. At the end of the day, again, I don't care where you are, stop. And I know you're on call, and I know this, you're on call 24/7. At some point, you have to just stop, do your dismount, and turn around the chair and do this. And you stay, and you walk away, if only for a short time. This is my luggage. A lot of you have black roller bags. Mine is the only one that has orange chicken feet sticking out of it. When it's in the overhead, nobody messes with my bag. Nobody asks if they can move my bag. And the way this came about was, you know how at the airplane you're supposed to put it in wheels first? They always say that. Sometimes this doesn't fit, and I have to put it in like this. People will come behind me, move the bag, and then I have to check my bag. Since the chicken feet got there, this doesn't happen anymore. I've watched people grab the handle, get right about here, and just put it back. This is nature's way of saying, leave this alone. And it has another function, too. I used to hate it when TSA does this all the time. Yeah, look in your bag. Now, seriously, what are your options? You don't have it. You can't go, oh, don't look in there. Scary things, you know. But I love, they'll say, can I look in your bag, please? Look in my bag. I can't wait for them to do this. I was in Denver. The young man reaches in the bag, pulls out the rubber chicken. Now, he's not even surprised it's a whole rubber chicken. And, I mean, it's like he sees them all the time. And he takes it out to Port Arms, you know, and he begins to frisk it. And this is when I learned, you know, you're not allowed to take pictures at security, just FYI, because I learned from my mistakes. But he gets right about here. I had to bite my lip to keep from laughing. He flips it over. When he grabs it here, I have a tear coming down my face, and he just keeps going. And he literally goes right down to the toenails, and he hands it back, and he goes, it's clear. I didn't even know the right response to that, you know. So this really is. This is my carry-on bag. Now, on the other hand, I don't take this. The chicken doesn't go with me when I go to Hong Kong and some of those places. After that bird flu thing, they don't think that's funny at all. All right. So, but here now, this is my. I already showed you this. This is my check bag. I had another passenger take my bag by mistake one time. It happened once. It will never happen again. I had this sign put on it. This is not your bag. Many bags look alike. This isn't your bag because this bag belongs to Tim Gard. Does this work every time? No. I'm at the airport in Phoenix. It's going around the turnstile. People are reading it and laughing. It gets within about 10 feet of me, and this young man looks at the sign, laughs, and grabs the handle. And I said, come on. And he goes, that looks just like my bag except for the sign. Nothing I can do. These are some of my other ones. The one in the middle is one of my big sellers. Does this bag make my butt look big? All right, so I already talked about the humor is a celebration of miscommunication. But when you start learning to change the game, you start realizing that boring meetings are not a fact of life. You can have fun with them. You know, I sat in a meeting one time before cell phones were invented. You know, if you had to get out of the meeting, you had to be creative. You know, I'm sitting in the meeting one time, I'm starting to go to sleep, and I can't go to sleep. I'm sitting at the table with the director of the agency that I work for. You ever had this happen where you start losing control of your neck muscles? You know what's happening, you know, and it's like, and my eyes are rolling, you know, and it's like, and I know I'm going to go to sleep. And I thought, what can I do? What, I've got to do something, you know, and all I have to work with is just the same as this. All I have is a piece of paper and a pen in front of me. Same things you all have. I have to somehow get out of this meeting. And it's like, I thought to myself, what would MacGyver do? How can I MacGyver my way out of this meeting? You know, and I'm, is that my pen? Now, did I really throw the pen? No. But I'm sitting here looking at it, laughing, and my boss looks over and goes, do you need to step out for a minute? Oh, yeah. Those are the glasses. This is a new invention of mine. You know, you'll go to a meeting and you want to kind of stall for time. This is one of my new inventions. This is called a seat saver. If you put this on the seat, you can save. These are fun at banquets too. But if you don't want somebody sitting next to you at the airplane, this works really well. And I know some of you are saying, Tim, did you bring any more of those? Got to raise your hand to get the free stuff. Here you go, all the way to the back here. Now, I want to make a point here. Are these are pretty cool, don't you agree? This is something anybody can use. Whose name's on the back? Tim Gard. They will see this when you put this on your desk, you probably never forget the person that gives it to you. Does this make a great marketing tool for your businesses? You bet. Humor is a great sales tool. And humor creates links that other things just won't work. Let me go past. Oh, here's. This is one of my favorite Tim's tools. When you checked into the hotel here, they said, what's your name? Do you have a reservation? Do you have a what? Not just a credit card, a major credit card. I had these made up. On the front it says, this is a major credit card. My last name is Guard, so it's a MasterGuard card. 1-800-865, that's my international 800 number. I'm a traveler. And they look me right in the eye and they go, Mr. Guard, do you have some other form of identification? And if you turn the card over on the back, it says, here is some other form of identification. Now, do they laugh every time they see this? No, I don't care. But I can't wait to check in that hotel. When I checked in here last night, I'm telling the shuttle driver, come on, we got to get in there. They've never seen this before. I can't wait to show it to them. One of the first times I did it, I was on Vancouver Island at the Empress Hotel. Very first time. Very beautiful property. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I remember I walk up, and this young man behind the counter, I'm his worst nightmare. I'm ready to play, and he's the only human available, you know, and I just gotten these. I just had gotten them. And I walked up and I said, hi, Tim Gard, checking in. What's he say? What's your name? Still Tim Gard. Do you have a reservation? Yes, I do. He said, sir, I'm going to need to see a major credit card. I said, I have one right here. And he takes the card and he looks at it. And he doesn't know what to do. The numbers aren't raised on it, you know. And normally, he'd ask for help. There's nobody there, and he does it anyway. And he's, and he looks at me and goes, sir, I don't know what to do. And I said, if it were me, now this is just me, but if it were me, I would ask for some other form of identification. And he said, do you have some other form of identification? Woohoo! You know, and I, and he looks at me and he goes, this is a joke, isn't it? Ah! Now, here's the thing with this. I give these out literally all over the world. It's not valid to sign it. Who wants a major credit card? I give these out all over the world. That's my 800 number on the front. Now, these are free. I brought a bunch to give to you. These are free, but in the larger seminars that I do, I sell these for a dollar. My customers buy my business card for a dollar and then show it to everybody. Is that good marketing? You bet. This is about finding ways of getting your name to your customers in a format where they're going to enjoy the journey. I have some more. Come up and see me. I brought a bunch extra. But they're going to enjoy the journey, and they're going to want to share your message with other people. And these help me stay current, too. I went to check in a hotel in Miami. Hi, Tim Guard checking in. What'd they say? What's your name? Still Tim Guard? Do you have a reservation? Yes, I do. And this young man looks at me, and he goes, and how would you like to make payment? And I said, where did that come from? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, that's not what you're supposed to ask. And he said, what am I supposed to ask? I said, I can't tell you or it's not funny. You just have to ask. And he goes, how would you like to make payment? And I said, you missed out on a lot of fun, buddy, a lot of fun. So I had these made up. And I'll show you the new ones. But I said to him, I thought, I'll write some new material. I walk up again. Hi, Tim Guard, checking in. What'd they say? What's your name? Still Tim Guard. And this guy says, and how would you like to make payment? Well, now I'm ready. And I said, I'd like to make payment with tales of glory and adventure. And the guy just stared at me, you know. And he looks at the woman sitting next to him and he goes, we don't accept tales of adventure. I said, then with soybeans. In my bag, I have soybeans for everybody. Soybeans, soybeans. He said, do you have a major credit card? Oh, yeah. Here, I'll give you one more. This is a new, brand new, I don't even know if you've seen these. Have you seen these yet? These are brand new. You know how we always ask for a discount? This is the ultimate discount card. I always ask for a discount. And they can pick whatever discount they want. It is good for anything at any time. It looks official. But then they'll ask me, is this a joke? And if you turn it over on the back, it says, no, this is not a joke. It's valid for anything, anytime, any place. And this little print that's on it, I almost have to walk up here and read it. It says, this is the really, really small print. Print so small, it's almost impossible to read. Simply give the bearer of this card the best discount you can and move on. Nothing more to see, nothing more to talk about. Just do it now. You want to give them a discount, so why not? Reading further is very difficult the older you are, so why hurt your eyes? Don't read this. Why are you reading this? I told you not to read this any further. And I'll look at them, and they'll say, I don't have a punch. And so I reach in my pocket, and I always carry my punch with me, and they'll go, I'll give you 10%. Good for me, you know. And I just give it a little punch right there. And I've gotten, since we started this, every year I keep a record of it, I've already saved $318. Is that fun? You bet. It's just a matter of having fun. All right, so where are we here? So, questions? No, Tim. All right, so the last part is share it. Say it. I want you to learn to share this with others. One of the best things that I've found is to use my policy manual to look at things differently. And when people tell you that they can't see things differently, they may need some help. I spoke for the United Council on Welfare Fraud. 600 of some of the angriest people I've ever seen in my life. And one of the guys there said, Tim, you used to be a fraud investigator. You know, what do you do? You used to have to arrest people. What do you do when people don't go to jail? And I told him I had these glasses made. I took two forks and I welded them together. And I said, if you put these on and turn your head sideways, you can see what they look like behind bars. Just one time. And I know some of you are saying, Tim, did you bring any more of those? Got to raise your hand to get the free stuff here. There you go. But this policy manual, what I've discovered with all this is that we need some little thing that can help us transition from somebody's digging their heels in that they can't or can't do something. And the policy manual, this policy manual works just great to be able to do that. So here I'll show you. So first time, again, I use it, I go to check in a hotel, and they refused to give me a non-smoking room. And I told the guy, I said, I don't smoke. And he says, you have to sleep in a smoking room. And I said, I don't have any cigarettes. You know, I can't help you with that. And I thought he'd laugh. He wouldn't laugh. And I said, do you have any non-smoking suites available? And he types and he goes, we do, but they're $150 more per night. Now, I know for a fact I can't pass that cost on to my customer, right? So I said, can you upgrade me to a non-smoking suite at no cost since you gave away my non-smoking room? And the clerk goes, no, our policy is we don't upgrade based on smoking preference. So I opened up my policy manual to 2000.2, and I read, if I request and reserve a non-smoking room in any hotel and that property then gives my non-smoking room away to another guest prior to my arrival, then that hotel is required by law to upgrade me to a non-smoking suite at no additional cost to me, no exceptions. And she said, is that really there? And I showed it to her. And she read it, and she's showing the other clerk, it's right here. He's not kidding. And she goes, I don't know what to do. I said, my hands are tied. You know, once I've evoked the policy manual, there's nothing I can do. And she said, you need to talk to the manager. So I opened up my policy manual to 3000.1, talking with managers about my policy. And I read to her, once I verbalize my policy to any employee at any level, I'm then forbidden by policy to repeat said policy verbally in writing to anyone else. No exceptions. And she said, can I get a copy of that? Oh, yeah. And I initialed it. I slept in the presidential suite that night. The non-smoking presidential suite. Who wants a policy manual? Yep, there you go. And here's a sticker right on the front there for you. And again, with these, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But you know, the thing is, hiding behind policies is not what you want to do. You know, you want to tell people, this is what I can do. This is what I can't do. And that these are the options that you have. And I'll give you another one. I had a lady tell me one time they refused to seat me until the entire dining party had arrived at a restaurant. And I just told her, that doesn't work for me. It's a surprise birthday party. So I hand wrote this in my policy manual. If I'm the first of several friends to arrive at a restaurant and the greeter refuses to seat me until the rest of my party arrives, then I'll be provided free of charge any substance I eat or drink during the time the table is withheld. No exceptions. And she goes, I just saw you write that in that book. So I turned to 1000.3, official policy benchmark, and I read to her, this authorizes me to write new and updated policies in this book as needed. Said handwritten policy shall immediately become effective and remain in effect till a final and full and final policy can be formulated, finalized, and recorded in the appropriate category. And she looked at me and she said, you win. And I said, I don't want to win. I just want to have fun. You know, this is what I try to do, is that when I'm traveling around talking with people, I just want to have fun. And when you start quoting what I call policy folklore, that's when we start running into trouble. You know, in these books that I have, you can even, if somebody says no, you can actually turn right to yes. It's just written in big print, you know, and I just, right here, yes, you know. There's even one that's got small print policy that's too small for them to read it. You know, I've watched them. They get like right about here. And in the back of the policy manual, if you want to make an argument for something, you need charts and graphs. So in the back of the policy manual are charts and graphs. And I'll ask the person, I'll say, do you want me to be satisfied? Yes, I do. Well, if I don't get my way, according to this graph, if I don't get my way, I may be only 20% satisfied. If I get my way, I could be up to 100% satisfied, which in my quarterly chart on the left shows is clearly best for me. And I've actually had people go, that makes sense, Mr. Card. You want one of those? Here. I'll make sure you guys get one. The bottom line with all this is that I want to have fun. I don't want anybody stopping me. And I want people to learn that we can do this and not get angry. I did a program for a group of dog catchers that told me that I couldn't find anything funny for what they did. So I got them these. I carry this with me now just to have fun at TSA. They will take this out of my bag and they'll be standing here with this on their arm. And it's like, again, and the purpose of this is, Mr. Guard, that normal people laugh, you know, and then you just go like there. It's just a matter of having fun. All right, so let me wrap this up here for you. Stay. When this is my world, and that head is not to scale. When you travel, when you go anywhere, where do you want to sit on the airplane? If you have to fly somewhere, everybody has a favorite place you want to sit. Where is it? Okay, have I taught you nothing? First class is where we want to sit. What does it hurt to ask? I ask all the time. Can you upgrade me? I mean, I ask all the time. If you don't ask, you don't get. But a lot of you may not know this. How many of you, when you get on the airplane, want to sit in the window seat? Window seat people. How many of you want to sit in the aisle? How about this guy right here? Not only do you not want to sit there, do you want anybody there? So what do you do to inhibit people from considering this as a valid seating option? What do? Put your suit. Yeah, suit jacket works really good. Seat saver works really good. Here's another one. You put stuff there, you raise the armrests up, and you casually command the largest possible area, all right? They can have this little area right here if they want to sit there. Now, do you make eye contact with people approaching your row? No. You don't want to appear interesting or attractive, right? And you mentally will them to keep moving past your row. As they approach your row, you beam your thoughts to them, and with the force of your mind, you pull them past your row. And I've watched people keep moving, and the volume of your chant is in direct proportion to the size of the person approaching your row. Keep moving. No. Now, just when you think boarding stops, it's a false lull, because now standby passengers are told to board. Standby passengers are often told to take the first available seat. This is when you need to be a little more aggressive. Here's what I want you to do. Find one of the little bags here, just like this. You'll find a little seat back pocket ahead of you. Open up the little bag, move to the edge of your seat, assume the position. It works, people. If somebody has an option where to sit and they see me with my head in an air sickness bag, this is nature's way of saying, keep moving. And if they slow down, I'll do this. If you sit here, can I have your bag too? Usually go through about four of them, you know. Now, just when you think nobody else is going to come on board, the last person gets on the plane, it's always the same person. It's the designated big, sweaty guy. They're required by law to pre-sweat them before they're allowed to board. Now, where's the big, sweaty guy going to sit? Right here. You saved him a seat. Big, sweaty guy is sitting next to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I've watched people smile, but their brains are doing what? Bummer. Big bummer. I'll give you one more piece of information. What you may not know, on a lot of flights, what they do is they'll board revenue passengers, then they board the standbys, and then they'll board non-revenue passengers, which are other employees of airlines. And then if they've had misconnects just moments before we're going to take off and they have first-class seats available, what they do is they'll move people like me, the million-mile flyers, up to first class and put somebody else in my seat. And they do it very secretly. They don't tell anybody. They don't come back and go, some of you will be upgraded. They don't do that. They come back, whisper to one or two people, take them away, and you never see them again. And they're real closed-mouthed about it. If you ask them, they don't want to talk about it, you know. And I remember one of the first times I watched them come back and take people away, and then they're replacing with, like, replicants or something. And I was on a plane one time going again to California. I didn't get upgraded, and that's a what? Nobody's in the middle seat. Woo-hoo. You celebrate those little things, visiting with this young lady here in the window seat, and just before the plane leaves, the flight attendant leans across, whispers to her, they pick up their gear and take off. And nobody says a word to Tim. And I thought, well, that's odd. I wonder what she did wrong. And a few minutes later, this man comes walking up, and he points at the chair, and he goes, sir, I'm in that window chair. And I said, there's the lady sitting there. And he goes, what lady? And he crowds in there, and flight attendant walks by, and I put my hand on it. I said, what happened to the lady sitting there? And she goes, what lady? And I remember the first time it happened to me, I'm sitting back in coach. I didn't get upgraded. Nobody's in the middle seat. Visiting with somebody here in the window seat. And just before the plane, the door closes, I hear this whisper in my ear. It's a flight attendant, and she goes, Mr. Guard. And I look up to the flight attendant with a little list. She looks at me and she goes, please get your gear and come with me. No, I didn't do nothing. And she takes my arm and I'm going, help. And she takes me up to first class and she goes, sir, you've been upgraded to first class for free. Go back and get your gear. And before she can stop me, I'm back in coach going, first class for free. She said, that's why we usually do it quieter. But now, so let me put all this together for you. I'm in Pocatello, Idaho, connected into Boise, Idaho. I had all the time in the world, and I walk up to the gate, and they're already boarding this flight. Now, I've flown almost 1 million miles by now, And they're already boarding the flight. What I didn't know was that smaller airports in the U.S., what they used to do was, if they had everybody checked in and gone through security, they would board the flight early, fly slower, use less fuel, and pay the pilots bonuses. Nobody told me that. All I saw was they were boarding the flight 40, 45 minutes early. I'm not going to go sit there with the amateurs. I'm going to go visit with the latte lady. Now, the latte lady was selling pond scum candy. And so I bought all she had. I bought 50 packs of pond scum. You got to jump on this stuff when you find it. And before I could even find out what it was, I just thought it looked fun. She points behind me and she goes, "Sir, are you on that flight to Denver?" "Yeah." She goes, "I think they're leaving without you." And I remember I look at my watch and I said, "I've got like 40 minutes. And she goes, "They're leaving." And I turn around and look, the boarding area is empty. I go running down the jetway, and I run all the way down to the end of the jetway. Here's another jetway. And I run all the way down to the end of that jetway. Here's a third jetway. I mean, I'm almost back to Pocatello. And I'm standing there, and the desk clerk behind me, you know, or the guy behind the counter, and I tear up my ticket, "Sorry," you know, and I'm knocking on the door. And I don't know the rules, you know, but I knock on the door, and this little face appears. It's a flight attendant. And she's looking at me, and she's saying something. I can't hear her, but I can see her lips moving, and she's doing this. She's saying, "What do you want?" What do I want? I mean, what, do people come door to door selling cookies or something? And she opens the door and she looks at me. I thought she'd apologize. And she goes, "Now I have to do the safety instructions again." And before I realized what I'm doing, I looked at her and I said, "Bummer." Then I thought, was that out loud? Did I say that out loud? And she goes, "Take the first available seat." And I thought, no way, I'm going to take my assigned seat, which I hope is in first class. And I look, first class is full. And that's a what? And so I look at my boarding pass, and all that's left are three or four middle seats. And I'm seeing who has to move, because I know somebody's moved from their middle seat to my aisle. And it says, "See agent, seat not assigned." And as a little bead of sweat came down, I realized I was, in fact, the designated big sweaty guy. I'd even been pre-sweated. They made me run that little gauntlet, and I throw myself in the middle seat between these two airport suits. Now, do these guys want me here? No. So I'm trying to make myself as tiny as I can, you know, and I'm trying to make friends because I can't go 2 hours without talking to somebody. And hello. Lucky thing I made this flight, huh? All this space would have been wasted. Hello. Is it me or do these seats get smaller every year? You know, no. So we back up. Just before we take off, the pilot announces we have a flat tire. Now, I'd never been on a plane with a flat tire before. And he said, "We're going to be there 20 minutes. 2 hours, we're still there. 4 hours later, we're still there. And there's no air conditioning. It's the heat of the sun on this airplane. My heat activated deodorant is way past activation." These two guys are still on page one of USA Today, you know, and I've done everything I can do to amuse myself. I've exhausted the battery in my laptop. I read the magazine. I read SkyMall. I know up to the front of the plane, all they had was 8 issues of Single Working Mother magazine. I don't have children, read it anyway, and I'm finally reduced to reading the last thing I'd never read before, the safety instructions. Now, have you really read them? The very first thing it says is, if you're seated in an exit row and you cannot read or understand this, contact a flight attendant. Now, in my heat-addled brain, that's the funniest thing I've read in years. If I can't read or understand this, how do I know to ask for help from anybody? And I'm laughing hysterically. This guy looks over, and I'm trying to explain myself. If you can't read it, contact a flight attendant. And all it does is scare him. He's way over here. And this guy's looking my way. I know if I turn my head quick enough, I go, "Hello." And he's trapped. He's got nowhere to go. And he looks at me, and he goes, "What?" Now, I know not to talk about this anymore, and this is what I blurt out. "Wonder how they knew we had a flat tire." And he said, "What do you mean?" And I thought, "I don't know what I mean. We're chatting. You don't have to know what you mean to chat. I mean, it's not like we're building a submarine out of common household appliances and have to show our work before we land." And before I could get out of my mental thought there, this guy is over, he's leaned way over here, and I thought, well, I'll try a little of this pond scum. I'd never tried it before. So I poured a little bit in my mouth. It's very sour, and I thought I didn't get a good mixture, so I poured a little more in. Big clump fell in my mouth, and I started to mix it together as I read the directions, and it says, sour foaming candy wait 10 seconds for foaming effect. And I can feel it expanding in my mouth. And when it gets here, I have waited too long. And I go to get up, and I got my seatbelt on. When I do this, it erupts out of my mouth all down the back of the seat. And I'm doing this and foaming, and this guy yells, "He's having a heat stroke!" And the two suits get up and run away, and the flight attendant sees me doing this with foam coming down, and she's yelling for those defibrillator things. And she gets me all the way up the front of the plane. She said, "Do you need an ambulance?" I said, "No, it's just this pond scum." But I said, "My shirt and jacket are ruined." And she looked me right in the eye, and she said, "Bummer." She said, "Now go back to your seat." And I went back to my seat humiliated. But the greatest thing happened. The plane took off 10 minutes later. The suits never came back. I ended up having the whole rotor myself. So when this company went out of business, I bought all the pond scum. I bought it all. I owned it all. If I can't fly first class, I start foaming at the mouth. People will sit in the toilet to get away from me on airplane. And this is a true story. You can't make this stuff up. But the bottom line is, this either becomes your best story or your worst nightmare. It's either becoming a bummer or a what? Woohoo. When I walk down that aisle today with my boarding pass, I'll walk down, and if there's an open seat here in the middle, I'll walk past, and if these people seize up because they think I'm going to sit there, I'll walk past them with my boarding pass, and if I hear, phew, I'll give them about two rows, and I will go back. You can almost see their heads blow up like that Scanners movie. And this is the gift that I want to give to you. You know, humor is probably one of the business skills that is probably used the least. And yet it's something anybody can do at any time. Laughter becomes you. You know I'm going to fly out of here in a couple days. I'm actually at the hotel for a couple days. By the way, one of the first questions I asked when they said how many nights, I said, "Is everybody else from the hotel staying here?" And if they would have said no, I think I would have gone somewhere else. But I know for a fact when I get on that plane, I'm either going to sit next to the big sweaty guy or what? I'd be the big sweaty guy. Everything else a bonus. And for you this year, you know, people are not always going to be yippy-skippy happy when they talk to you. People are going to want to see you yesterday. Your employees are going to walk into some of the most bizarre, you and your employees are going to walk into some of the most bizarre, scary situations on the planet. And the bottom line with all this is, if you don't look at it as something that you can get better and better at and have fun with it, you'll eventually burn out on it. And that's what I want you to do. Raise your right hand, repeat after me. I state your name. Promise to use my comic vision every day. I'll have fun. I'll use humor first for myself, and I'll share it. High sign. Thanks for sharing it with me. Have a great conference, everybody. You're going to have a great time.
I know it.
And thanks to Bear. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm sexy, and I know it.
Thank you, Tim. We really appreciate the presentation. We've got some great tips now to incorporate humor into our daily lives. And Tim will be with us until noon today if anybody has any questions or wants to spend some time with him. Just a quick announcement, we're going to take a break now in the exhibit hall. We'll be back here at 11 o'clock, so 15-minute break, and we'll dim the lights in the exhibit hall when we're ready to come back. So thanks, guys.